Blog Talk Radio.
And Jesus was a working man. Jesus was a working man. He had muscles of steel and calloused hands. Always had a master plan. Yeah, Jesus was a working man. Jesus was a working man. He had muscles of steel and calloused hands. He played in a rock and roll band. Yeah, Jesus was a working man. Jesus was a rocking man. Jesus was a working man.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. Welcome back to the Wednesday broadcast of the Cosmic Citizen Show. And we have a very special guest with us today, longtime friend Larry Mullins. Hello, Larry.
Hi, how are you?
Good. We're checking our sound. There's some people on the chat board, and I'm checking here to see if... Okay, Larry of Colorado is saying he had to do the browser refresh, so that's interesting. So we'll just give that a moment for everybody to get online. And Brother Dave had to refresh. And for those who are listening live, if you're not, well, how could they hear me if they don't? Oh, Larry's writing it in. Okay, he's going to... Do a refresh. So, Larry Mullins, I was looking here at your bio, and it's quite remarkable. And I'll say more than a dual path. You have really been walking down a wonderful path in a multiple manner with your artistic giftings of writing. And I personally know of your artwork, having collaborated with you on some artwork from my first study guides of the Urantia book. And you are president and CEO of Ultra Cells. And this is a company. When did you found this company, Larry?
Oh, you know, I've been doing advertising for, gosh, 30-some years. And quite a few years ago from working with Clyde Bedell.
Yes.
Where I also got my...
Clyde was quite well known in the that arena in the... what years would you say that he was best known?
Oh, he's very famous. I met him when he was about 72 years old in Santa Barbara and went to work for him. And he was quite a famous man in advertising at that time. And he introduced me to the Urantia book, of course.
Right. That's phenomenal. I know the gentleman that introduced me to the book is going to be the guest Saturday on the Saturday broadcast, so we'll give a plug there with Andre and Paula, Dr. Lawrence Scotty. So we'll invite
him. Oh, yeah, I know Dr. Lawrence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a great man. What a blessing.
Oh, yeah.
And
he came to Oklahoma City a couple times.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he did his right brain, left brain test.
He actually introduced me to that, and then I ended up being certified as well. And he taught me systems analysis when I went back to UTA. And I teased him. I said, well, I pulled an A out of it somehow or another. It's hard to get one with him. He was a taskmaster. Okay, Larry, it's hard to describe your background. I'm looking here. You've written several books. Of course, I have Immature People with Power. That's a fascinating book. What year did you write that?
Yeah, that was back in the 60s. And I do really want to make it clear that there's none of us have really had a straight path as we struggle with learning about the book and applying the teachings.
Right.
And I haven't either. I've had some ups and downs and some big ones, and we all have. And after getting the book from Clyde, I just put it aside. I read at it once in a while, but it never really meant much to me.
What year was that, Larry?
He gave it to me about, I guess it was approximately 1968.
Wow.
And then it was, but I had it and really didn't use it. I mean, I didn't really, that's, you really have to study the book to and apply it. It takes a long time. But anyway, it wasn't until 1974 when I lost my daughter that I desperately needed to read the book from cover to cover without stopping. And that's when I first did it, and I did it twice in a very short time. That was one turning point in my life.
How old was your daughter at the time? You write about that right at the end of your marvelous book, which we're about to be discussing today, your latest book, The Meta Values Breakthrough, which remarkable read, remarkable.
Yeah, I appreciate that you say that. I really do. And then the second turning point was really almost...
How old was she, Larry?
Yeah. She was 13 and lost her to drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when I read the Ranch book and got involved with Berkeley Elliott and gave talks and wrote The Immature People's Power and things like that. But it was 12 years later when, after I had lost my first wife and was married, that I went through a divorce. And 12 years later was when the episode in the epilogue of the book took place, and that's when I think it started to dawn on me the reality of the burdens I was carrying, even as a Urantian and even as a supposed person that knew something, but I was carrying resentments that were crippling me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the light kind of opened up. It's an extraordinary story, as you know, and it was really a life-changing peak experience. And also the other thing I should say is that Abraham Maslow, I was studying him about the time I lost my daughter, and somehow after reading the Rancher book, it appeared that everything that I ever thought was rearranged in my mind somehow, and many things were discarded, but it was a whole different way of thinking, and that to me fascinated me, that process that took place in reading the book in the way I did, needing it as badly as I did.
Your whole process of the way you processed information, mm-hmm. there was a shifting?
Yeah, absolutely. And it took me many, many years to understand more about that process. I think that's what I became fascinated by, and that's why I wrote the Meta Values Breakthrough as a practical application of the Urantia teachings. But I do want to make it clear that all of us have in us the ability to create a very important thing relative to the Urantia book. I think none of us can master the entire book, as some people think they have, but I think all of us can really do that in some little segment of it, and or at least come closer to it. And I think we all should try to follow that path to evangelize what we know the best, what we can do the best. And it could be science, it could be history, it could be religion, it could be any number of things.
And that term evangelize, Larry, that can be misconstrued.
It could, yeah, I know.
And you're one of the masters of words. How would you define?
Well, I think Rodin defined it the best.
And you might explain Rodin, because we do have listeners that are not readers of the Urantia book.
Sure.
And which is fine, by the way. You know this is more than anybody with me. I'm not about evangelizing the book.
Absolutely. I know you're about the teachings. Rodin was a philosopher.
Many marvelous teachings on this planet. And you've done a lot of research in that area.
And I think we're in danger of having a religion about a book if we don't recognize that fact. The new and everlasting religion of Jesus needs to be redefined with each generation. My daughter was talking to me about that last night. from Boulder we were talking. And that's, I think her generation likes that and wants to grab onto that and wants to restate the new and everlasting teachings of Jesus, which are, you know, each generation is challenged to do that.
Well, and how would you define evangelism?
Well, Rodin, I think, said it best, and I'd heard Meredith Sprunger say this many times. Rodin stated that Rodin was a philosopher, I should say, that met with Jesus' apostles to discuss issues with about the evangelism and the teachings and how they apply, and he was kind of a philosopher of his day, way ahead of his time. It's a marvelous two papers about him. But when Rodin was challenged two of the apostles and said that if you have a religion that you believe in and you don't evangelize it, you really don't have a religion at all. You have a philosophy. And a philosophy is fine, and that's good, and you can talk about it, whatever, but religion cuts deeper into the layers of psychology or thought and into our set patterns, and auto-revelation kicks in, and people need to express their own personal view of religion and the Urantia Book and the Urantia teachings and through their personal experience interpretation of it, and that to me is what we should do. I consider it evangelism when I'm talking to an atheist about the teachings without mentioning the book and how they dovetail with many aspects of ordinary philosophy and ordinary secularism and things like that, how they are useful and how they give meaning and depth to any intellectual perception, even though it may be purely secular and purely materialistic. I consider that evangelism without even mentioning the Urantia Book or Jesus.
Absolutely, because we're very, we have sought to be very clear as readers of the Urantia Book of the difference between the religion of Jesus versus the religion about Jesus.
Absolutely.
And because I had a gentleman the other night, a Christian minister, a longtime minister that mainline Christianity, and he said, you know, there are many that don't recognize Jesus because of the way we present him. And he said that in front of his congregation to me, by the way. I went, wow. But very very wonderful experience there. And that was last Wednesday evening. And it is so important. And, you know, speaking of atheists, Larry, there have been times because of me, you know, traveling around different parts of atheists have walked up to me and said, prove to me, you know, that, well, they don't say prove, but they go into this mode. And I said, you know, nobody, I'm just walking in faith that there's something beyond this life. No one has ever gone to the other side and brought back videos, you know?
Mm-hmm. And very true.
And so I said, you know, we just have to do the best we can with what we have here on the planet.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I have an atheist friend who's actually an ex-minister and disillusioned about many things. But the thing that makes this guy fascinating, he's also an actor, and he's performed in many performances. And he goes around to churches still to this day. In fact, he gave one this week in St. Augustine, gives performances of where he presents the Joseph, the father of Jesus, in a soliloquy, Judas in a soliloquy, and Peter the big fisherman in a soliloquy. And these are very well received, and he seems passionate and honest about it. But in private conversations with me, he said he no longer believes. And An artist
no longer believes
in God. He's beyond it. It's like it's.
Oh.
And I keep this secret because he told me I can't tell anyone because he would, you know, that would be the end of his career talking to churches. But he's a fascinating guy, and I have had many wonderful conversations with him. And this is, it was quite interesting because he challenged me in almost the same way. He said, you know, if there was some proof or something, it would be different. But he said, I've been so disillusioned with formal religion. And I said, you know, that's understandable. But he said, I don't believe in an afterlife. I can't really be sure positively, but I can't believe there's any way that there could be an afterlife. And I remember he mentioned this to me. I was just about getting my car. We had just had lunch together, and so it was a kind of a rushed moment. And you think, okay, this could be one of those turning point moments if I can say the right thing. And so I said, well, if you know, every morning, every day, I have a miracle that I can't explain, and you can't explain either. We both experience it. And he said, what are you talking about? And I said, well, every night I surrender consciousness. I'm Larry, and I trust that in the morning I'll wake up and consciousness will return, and I'll still be Larry.
Every night I surrender consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And every
I don't recall you saying that. That's right there. You're right. We drift off and we surrender consciousness.
And we trust that in the morning we'll wake up and we'll still be Ann and Larry and we'll still know where we are. Well, this, most people pass over this and don't think that much of it. And I think the reason being is consciousness is centered in personality, in my judgment, and we can't be, the observer cannot be the thing observed. So that's what we experience, but we can't really look at it. We can't really understand it or make sense of it. Another way of saying that, and I've said this to many people, tell me something. What's your telephone number? And they'll tell me. I say, okay. Now tell me what looked for it and where did it find it? And I get a blank look. Well, we use our mind and our consciousness constantly, and we never really think about the miracle that takes place. And this kind of impressed this minister friend of mine. He puzzled over it. And then I said, you know, it's very much like the yogas and the Buddhists, and they talk about consciousness much more than we do, and they seem to understand it better than we do. But I didn't convert him, but he constantly wants to talk to me about different aspects of philosophy.
I find that it's so interesting. He isn't converted, and he's a minister. But you know what? There's a lot of ministers in all religions that, and I use that term minister, you know, the man, woman, that representing their faith, that really move into the dark night of the soul in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times because sometimes people around them expect them to, you know, be more. And it's a hard place to sit in as far as being that. And we need to pray for him, Larry. I know you already do, and pray for you, that divine wisdom, and of course, the acts are ours and the consequences are God's.
I think we have to, but we also have to respect that he has a thought adjuster, and I think on some level he believes, like Maslow said he was an atheist, but near the end of his life he said, I'm going to keep working and trying to get my message through about the reality of values, the highest values and the importance of people reaching higher levels of consciousness. I'm going to keep trying to do that. I think if there was a great dictator somewhere in the universe, that's what he would command me to do.
Hmm.
And to me, I think on some level he did believe. And I think on some level this guy must believe, because I've watched him in his performances, and it's more than just his intellectual shtick. He's really digging deep into his soul when he expresses his emotions about this.
And people's lives are being changed as a result.
I think so, and they love it. Another thing, when we think about ministers who preach things they don't believe and are in a quandary about that, the three disciplines we know of religion, science, and philosophy, all three do that. I mean, science in quantum physics, if you talk to quantum physics and the Copenhagen interpretation of it, a dyed-in-the-wool believer in that interpretation would tell you that if you looked at the moon, if everybody stopped looking at the moon, for a long period of time it would disappear because we create the moon in a sense. That's based on quantum physics theory, and that's honest to God, as ridiculous as that sounds, that's what they teach in quantum physics.
Are you serious?
In the Copenhagen pure interpretation, yes.
Wow.
Now, they don't. Nobody really believes that.
Right.
And nobody really believes many of the things that quantum physics tries to tell us, even though we know that the reason quantum physics doesn't have time and space, apparently, and matter seems to come from nowhere, is because we're looking into the mind of God. We're looking into the unqualified absolute, and yeah, that's true, and God is expressing time and space and making it possible, but we're just getting the very fringes of his incredible mind, the unqualified absolute, and that's what makes time and space possible. But they don't, what I'm saying is that many scientific things that they like to talk about and startle us with, like multiple universes and things like that, to explain some of the phenomena that they see, they don't really believe, I don't think. They drive to work. They don't think that they're in multiple universes. They stop at red lights, and they do different. They know they only live in one universe as far as their consciousness goes. So it's not just ministers. And philosophers the same way. They say things that are so absurd, I don't think they really believe me either.
I agree. Yes. And
so when you need a synthesis of these three philosophies, and I think that the book tells us that we are spared the a priori assumptions of science, religion, and philosophy by a reality, sense of reality that we have, the reality factor that I wrote about in the book. That spares us that we have to slavishly believe in what they tell us.
Well, speaking of your book, The Meta Value Breakthrough, I want to tell you something. This is kind of interesting. I mentioned this on another broadcast when you stepped in the door back in December, that I had flagged my personal copy of your book, and Steve and I gave it copies as gifts to our children, and I gave one to a minister last night, by the way. And so my personal hardback copy, and it's I had it flagged, you know, so I could easily reference it. Well, a young friend had borrowed it. She's actually a young Russian lady, and she took it with her on a trip to the Parliament of World Religions. Well, a month ago I saw her, and I said, she said, "Oh, you need to get your book back." I said, "Yes," and I brought you a softback, because and there's one other person I'd given a copy to. They're a wonderful young man and just a delightful young teacher and scholar. I'll use that word. Anyway, we went to the parking garage together, and she was engaged with some situations in her life that she needed a sounding board. I laid the book down. I now remember, because last night I looked everywhere for it, Larry. It was left, I'm 90% sure it was left in that parking garage, you know, where you sit waiting on your vehicle. So somebody out there is being blessed by that book.
Oh, well, that's good.
Now, saying that, that means I didn't have time. Long story, a dear minister friend of mine, his 59-year-old brother passed away Saturday in the wee hours. So I've been dealing with a lot of that, helping him because the brother's in Washington, state of Washington, and we're here, you know, and trying to. So anyway, I was going to sleep, and I said, what are they going to do? I'm totally out of time. And I glanced at your book, and I just scanned through it quickly, used the skills that I have in speed reading, just only had just a few minutes because I was very tired. And I decided to try what I'd heard. It's just probably, I'm sure it's a legend, urban legend, that Brother Billy Graham said that he couldn't grasp the Bible, so he laid it under his pillow.
Yeah.
And so I laid it there. I said, okay, osmosis. But I woke up in the early morning and, you know, and was looking. And I have read it at least twice, and I had it downstairs, you know. So I just wanted to tell you that somewhere out there somebody's reading your book.
Well, that's good for one.
And my name's in it, but I didn't put a way to contact me, so that's interesting. And so we're going to talk about your book here a little bit more. It's really hard for me to pick out my favorite part, but something that caught my attention that you said earlier, resentment embittered me. Whoa. Carrying excess baggage. You write about that in your book, and there's a profound story you tell, and we're going to talk about resentment. And I also like the story you tell about the Olympic coach.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing.
Oh, and how he sought out the Russian Olympians.
Mm-hmm.
But first, resentment embittered me. Would you expound on how you seek, when I read your book, I observed someone who really had let go of a lot of resentment and baggage. Because if we don't do that, where are we going to go?
Absolutely. And there's a principle there that operates. People in AA, I think, have nailed it really well. The entire book is based upon the Kingdom of Heaven paper, just a few lines in that. Although the resentment part also is mentioned there, that until you forgive others, you can't receive the forgiveness of God. That's very clearly stated in the Kingdom of Heaven paper early on. And until you actually forgive others, God's forgiven you, but you can't accept that forgiveness until you forgive others. So all of us are constantly crippled by that. Now, why? Because being a victim is probably the most popular activity that human beings indulge in.
Oh, being a victim. Say it again, Larry.
Well, it's the most popular activity that people handle. Ever since I was a kid, I remember in working for the phone company, I got tired of sitting at the lunch table and listening to all these people who were victims. It was just common. They were resenting and angry at the company and their wife and the next-door neighbor, and this happened, and they were all unfairly treated. And it took years and years before I realized that I was on another level. I did the same thing. The thing, most of us can live with that because we just kind of, these are resentments that are, but they vindicate the fact that we haven't mastered the inner life ourselves. The book, when Jesus gives the five cardinal principles of the kingdom, the first one he mentions is the preeminence of the individual. And it took a long time for me to understand it. By the way, those five principles that are in the book, I think they're on page 1863. I don't know many pages on, but this I happen to know. It says the world's never seriously or sincerely or honestly tried out these dynamic ideas and divine ideals of Jesus' doctrine of the kingdom of heaven. Now, there's five of them listed. Now, I guarantee that if you ask any Urantian to name one of them, you wouldn't get an answer. I've tried it with groups, and I it's amazing. And they all panic when I say, okay, let's have the first person name one. Well, nobody can name one. Now, you'd think that if we totally are committed to the kingdom of heaven, when Jesus formally, and it was the only time he formally presented his teachings in a way so structured, because he anticipated what was going to happen to him in Jerusalem, his last trip to Jerusalem. But the first statement, the preeminence of the individual, was a revolutionary statement at the time, because at the time it was the community. The community was preeminent. We served the community. What did that mean? Is he talking about egotism? What does he mean by that? And in the text of the book, you discover that Jesus makes a statement. He says, I've come to restore the self-respect in people who have lost it, and to curb it in those who have too much of it.
Too much. Boy, that's a strong paragraph. That was on truthbook.com's one of their quotes in the last week. Very profound.
And you remember in the book I talk about Marva Collins, this black teacher in Chicago, who took kids that were rejects from the school system, and she turned them into Rhodes Scholars. And how'd she do that? She said, well, the first thing I do is I hug them until their eyes start to dance, and then I do. Now that idea of respect, for self-respect, Jesus talked about a sublime self-respect. Again, it's a two-edged sword, because you can only respect people to the degree, or yourself, to the degree you respect others. That was the key secret to me of why the preeminence of the individual was so significant. Number one, that we express auto-revelation in our lives. In a personal religion, the way we live is the truth of our being. So that's very important, the preeminence. But we can't have sublime self-respect, impregnable self-respect, unless we respect others to the equal degree. That just fascinated me, and I thought, well, okay, I get that. So that's the first principle of the kingdom. And then I said, okay, now the next one is equally puzzling. The second principle is equally puzzling. The will is the determining factor in man's experience, the will. So how can that be, when all these things can happen to people that they can't control? I mean, Viktor Frankl got thrown in a concentration camp. That wasn't his will. Again, if you think very hard and apply the Master's teachings, it reveals the deeper meaning that was there, and that was that the inner life is our responsibility. The kingdom of the inner life, we design and create by our own thoughts. We have total control over that inner life. We can't control the outer life, but we can control the inner. And that's the secret that Viktor Frankl discovered that helped him survive the death camp. And that's the secret of every person who achieves actualization of the personality to a greater degree, is that they take total responsibility for the quality of their inner life. That if their side of the street's clean, they're fine. If they're carrying resentments and hatred and anger and stuff, it's not. So that's why it was so important to me, the experience of learning to drop resentments. But those two principles are, without them, we can't progress in the kingdom, because the third principle there is very clear. It appeared to be a hierarchy of values, a hierarchy of motivations, very similar to Maslow, but they were spiritual. They were beyond what he talked about, which was quite material. They were into the self-actualizing area, the area of actualizing our highest level of being, our personality credits, expressing our personality totally. But those first two were about, number one, the preeminence of the individual, respecting others to an equal degree that you want to respect yourself, and number two, is that the will is the determining factor in the quality of your inner life and the quality of your kingdom, personal kingdom, and that's totally under our control.
Wow. Well, Larry, you know, this is a great place to interject something. We have a poetic interlude with our good friend here in Dallas-Fort Worth area, Suzanne Kelly, and she's been listening. She's actually been on the board here with us.
Oh, good.
And from her brilliant book, and I'm quoting someone there, her epical poem, Ilan Vital. Suzanne, are you there? Uh-oh.
Yes, can you hear me?
There you are. Hey, girl.
Oh, hi, Suzanne.
Oh, hey. How are y'all doing?
Great. And she has a copy of your book.
Yes, I do. Actually, I loaned it to a friend of mine who came over and said, oh, that looks interesting. And I said, okay, well, you can read it. So she took it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was. I was telling her about it. Oh, yeah, you know, and said, can I take this home? I'll bring it back. Anyway, that's good news.
Well, Larry, we just keep letting people borrow them, and then they're being left in seats in parking garages. So we'll just have to get multiple. Well, my copies that Steve and I bought for people, I think I'm down to two. Yeah, I am. We're down to two, Larry.
Well, you've been wonderful. You really have been wonderful, Ann.
Well, I've said this before. Of course, the Bible has just a tremendous impact, and it is flagged. My Revised Standard Study Bible, the Urantia book, is flagged. Suzanne's epical poem is flagged. Now, somebody took that one. Remember, Suzanne?
No.
Somebody.
Yeah.
Someone actually, a minister.
Is
you know it. You know him.
Yeah.
And so
is
now Larry. So there's my four books that are flagged.
Okay. I wondered if Suzanne's poem was posted somewhere.
Well, parts of it are out there on the Internet. If you'd like a copy, you know, I'd be glad to send you one.
Sure. Can you email me one?
I can't email it, but I can mail you a hard copy. You can give Ann your address, or she's got your
address, yeah,
and I can, and I will send you a hard copy.
I would really appreciate that. I love,
sure.
You know, poetry is such a fabulous way of expressing revelation.
Well, mine tends to go on. I was trying to find a passage to read today that was relevant in. As far as like forgiveness and stuff, I don't really have much on forgiveness, but I do have something that is kind of relevant in that kind of in the vein. If you'd like me to go on with that.
Oh, passage. Read the passage, sure.
Yes,
okay,
I am.
Ann, is that all right with you?
Hey, Ann, you still with us?
Yes, ma'am. I'm listening.
Okay, here we go. It's a small excerpt. It says, first regarding man and his liberty. It can be true and false as well. But when proclaimed in arrogance by men of power, it is served only to themselves. True liberty is regardful of social equity and continually espouses understanding fraternity. Its fairness is cosmic, its obligation divine. It's the possession of all. It's yours and mine. But unbridled self-will and self-expression unregulated equals unmitigated selfishness, ungodliness eventuated. Self-motivated liberty is an illusion and conception, an affront to humanity, a cruel deception. Masquerading license in liberty's garments is the forerunner to abject bondage's armaments. And to personal liberty, there is but a fine line in respect of self to admiration of mind. True liberty is the fruit of control of self. False liberty is self-assertion for wealth. Wealth of power over others is the greatest of errors, where true liberty smothers. And to all you who pose the unthinking question, why did God create evil? Take a step back and open your eyes. Evil's creation is man from his own free will.
That's good.
Thank you.
So that's very interesting what you said about power, because that's really the essence of truth, beauty, and goodness, what they do and what Maslow discovered and what we need to know is that when power leads us toward arrogance, truth reminds us of our limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And when power narrows our perceptions, beauty reminds us of the diversity of the world and the beauty of the world. And when power corrupts and injures, goodness heals and redeems. That's why truth, beauty, and goodness are so important to balance the desire to do things. Because there's nothing wrong with being aggressive. They mentioned Jesus was aggressive, but it has to be tempered completely by compassion and
totally
values. Yeah,
mm.
That's very good, though.
Thank you very much.
Remarkable poet. You're at work, right, Suzanne?
Yes, I am, and I've got to jump off.
Okay. Well, and we're taking a survey. I mentioned this. By the way, you're the first two. Some people are asking us to switch to Wednesday, early Wednesday evening, 11, maybe 7, but because so many people are saying, oh, we can't listen live because I'm at my office. So would y'all prayerfully think about that? Because that'd be 11-7. 11 is Saturday morning and then Wednesday evening. So think about that, okay? And get some feedback there.
Okay, great. Well,
okay,
I'm going to jump in, and I will get his address and send that on to you for sure.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, sure. Okay. Thanks. Y'all have a great day.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, and Larry, we have another caller, and in this interlude time, someone else, a friend of ours in Los Angeles, Bob Lawson, is a marvelous singer. Larry, are you there, Bob?
I am here.
Yes.
Hi, Bob.
Hello, Larry.
And
I met this.
I just love these poets and singers and artists that can just come off of the cuff and just go for it.
Oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah, you can detect the quality of the voice there, yeah.
Well, okay, you want me to just hit right at it? When Ann calls me in the morning, I never know what's going to come out of my mind. But I try to go in to touch my adjuster and see if, or whatever is being impressed upon me. And this song has come back to me 3 times in a row. So I figured, why fight it? We'll just sing it, and someone needs to hear it, I guess. Yeah, it's a hymn. It's an old hymn that I've sung many times in groups, with everyone else. But it's called Fill My Cup, Lord. It's a traditional song. Like the woman at the well, I was seeking for things that never satisfy. And then I heard my Savior speaking, draw from the well that never shall run dry. Fill my cup, Lord, I lift it up, Lord. Come and quench this thirsting of my soul. Bread of heaven, feed me till I want no more. Fill my cup, fill it up, and make me whole.
Very nice. That's amazing.
Wow. And that's one of my favorite stories of the woman at the well, Fill My Cup, where he said, you partake of, and she was a Samaritan, which in that day would be considered an animal, a dog. And Jesus walked off of the road and went to the well. And there's a long story about why that well was there, and which was just totally out of order for him to do that. And he saw into her life, just one sentence, and he saw totally into her life. And even in the scriptures, we can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that story and of the reality of the Spirit can fill us up and we don't quench anymore. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. And Larry, what you've done in the synthesis in your book and in the meta values, and is synthesize that. So there are tools that you present. So many people read their text of whatever particular faith they find themselves in, and they don't quite know how to apply those principles to their life.
Yes.
And so this is profound, and we need to. That makes me think. We need to give your website where people can find your website. Metavalues.net, is that?
Yeah, metavalues.net, sure. Or you can get the same thing from LarryMullins.com.
Okay.
Very close to that.
Bob, you need to go to that website. It's just a remarkable.
I'm on there. I'm reading the beginnings, the introduction to his book, talking about Dr. Maslow and how he tried to change the direction and thrust of the general psychiatry of the day. What he was doing concerning that, he wanted to look at the positive instead of the negative, that that world is still very much. Their books are all about people with problems,
and he wanted to
turn it obviously to people with great achievements or natural abilities that make them successful in life and living. So it's very interesting and a great read. I'm going to look forward to reading the rest of the book. Sorry.
Yeah, that's
there's some videos on there too. Eric, what a guy he is. Was that in your backyard in Florida?
It was, yeah.
We went
all over St. Augustine, and it was the quietest place we could find. You know, when you're doing those videos, he's amazing what the audio picks up. But we had a lot of fun, too. We had a blast. He's a fabulous guy.
Yes,
he's a very talented guy. But I should say about this, Maslow's looking, when he discovered self-actualizers, he discovered the people that were living by values. And there's only, he estimated 1% really enter into that full process, and that's what the book addresses, that we show evidence of truth, beauty, and goodness when we're at our peak experience moments, but self-actualizers able to make that a way of life and become a channel for truth, beauty, and goodness in their lives. That's what he said. To me, that's such an important thing, and you live by the kingdom and you'll do that. And I got to admit, too, that if I knew everything and lived by everything that was in my book, I'd be much, much better person than I am. So when I go back, I constantly look back in the book and review what I wrote, and I'm grateful that I was given some guidance in it. So I don't want to pretend that I'm a great guru who does all these things.
Well, we're all struggling with this thing, you know, the human condition. There's not a moment there's not a day that passes that I don't have, but the important thing is not to beat ourselves up, you know, and say, okay, yes, this is the mortal condition. Welcome to the universe. We all have our stories. I used to say welcome to the planet, welcome to the universe.
Yeah, there you go.
But that resentment embittered me. Bob, did you hear him say that earlier on? That to me, that really struck me in his book, letting go of those old grudges and that resentment, and then to move on and to visualize the process of, okay, actualize. And you tell the story in your book. I believe it's going to be very well known about there's two incredible stories about the prisoner of war gentlemen in North Korea, right?
Oh, the leadership, yeah.
That was interesting. And then, of course, the story about in Germany. So I would say tell the – which one do you think – I'd like you to share those two stories.
Yeah. We have probably enough time. I can tell you a little bit, enough time to tell you the one about the...
We have 11 minutes.
Yeah.
And we are scheduled. We can stretch it out there, but you and I talked about that it's better Well, you're going to be a regular on the broadcast. I'm very excited about
that. Well, you know, I really think maybe the evening thing might be better. We can, and we need to get send our emails and tell people what we're doing, because it's fun to participate and get the feedback from the people that from your ranchers about different things and their own beliefs and what they're trying to do. This is all really important, but they give them more of an opportunity in the evening, maybe.
Yeah, let's discuss that. Some of the guys and gentlemen in the chat room have problems with Wednesday evening, but so we'll just see.
Well, it doesn't matter. We can pick any evening, you know. But
sure, that's
a good point. Virtual study group.
It's awesome. That's the whole concept, a virtual study group. And I see that evenings, because most of our listening, 99% are on this continent. So we need to address that, and we're very flexible. That's the good thing about what we're all about here.
Yeah, it's a very different type of study group that you have here, in that it's more of a living the teachings group. We did these in Boulder, and they were wonderful, where people actually shared their ability or their experience in trying to live the teachings and the problems that they had and things like that. Far more important than to read passages from the book and things like that. I really think that's what you have your hand on right now.
It's been a wonderful experience for me, the Saturday broadcast. I don't think I've missed but one broadcast. And then we ignited. We said, okay, let's go with another one. Mm-hmm. And it's just a marvelous thing. Well, we'll work that out about the details of what.
Sure, that's good. It's just a wonderful idea. You're doing, this is the future, I think, of the movement. It's the what you've achieved here. We're just starting to learn how to do it, and I think it's marvelous what you did.
Well, it feeds my soul, and it feeds my sense of community, my need of community. Because I miss seeing you guys. I miss seeing the and I say guys, that for me that's male and female. And Bob, when's the last time you and I saw each other? Larry on the board, yeah. And Crystalline, I see Crystalline is here with us. It's just an amazing, and Crystalline does a beautiful job. She steps in. She is one of the hosts on the Saturday broadcast. Mm-hmm. Hey, Christy, you're more than welcome to call, girl, lady. And we want her to, if she has guests or wants to take the helm here on in the middle of the week, whenever we decide to do this broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's all about, you know. The study group I had for years and years, we rotated that, and it worked very nicely, rotated the facilitation. So we have a sound effect there.
That's my fax. I don't know what's
happening. That's okay. So, Bob, is Bob still with us? Maybe not.
Yes, I just mute my phone. I have to.
Oh, that's okay, yeah. So, Bob, did you have any more input? You're looking at the website. Any questions you have of Larry or feedback?
Well, again, without having read more of the book, but I can see from just the foreword where he's going with it. The terms that are so easily esoteric, the truth, beauty, and goodness, is abstract. It's abstract to us individually, because we don't see how that we can actualize those in our daily behaviors, in all of the different things that we do, and we always fall short. We'll always fall some other thing that happens to us that will go, like Ann says, why did I do that? I know better than that. But it's the struggle. It's that struggle to come to a place where we can be more alive. We can be in the present, which means forgetting the past completely. The past is dead. It's of no value to us other than for us to move forward from where we find ourselves today. And that allows us to live in the moment. It allows us to be led and to get ourselves in a position, which is what my big prayer and hope is, to be able to be of help to the cosmos, to all of those powers outside of us that yet are interested in not just our progression, but the progression of the world toward where we have to become in the term that we're familiar with, the light and life. How the world has to turn, how individually, because the whole thing is based upon one person at a time. So we have to deal with ourselves and that one person that we're going to see today that is going to allow us to do that. And that's my interest is focused on that now. It's a recurring theme comes through my mind continuously. Mm-hmm. How am I able to change myself into the now, and where is my next step? How can I be ready and available when I'm needed to say that word when it's brought to my attention?
Mm-hmm. Wow, Larry, you got that out of just the forward.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting what you're saying. We have just a minute. I'd give you an idea. I deal with businessmen constantly, and I'll tell them that we all share the same values, that one of the false things we're told is your values are mine, yours and mine are mine. And what I tell them every time is this. I say, look, we share the same values. Now, I don't use truth, beauty, and goodness for the reasons that they are esoteric. What I say is, would you hire someone who had no integrity? Because integrity is truth in action. You wouldn't hire anyone. So they immediately say, well, no, of course not. Well, we share that value. Would you hire someone who didn't really care about his associates or care about other people? No, well, caring is goodness in action. And finally, would you hire someone who didn't care about the quality of their work, didn't believe in excellence? Well, excellence is beauty in action. So I convert those into action verbs that are more meaningful to a more materialistic mind.
Wow. We're running out of time, gentlemen. Larry, you're going to be coming back. And I love that. And we're down to 3 minutes. And we didn't get to share the stories about the German.
We got plenty of time to.
We have eternity. I say give or take a day. So we're okay. Bob, thank you for calling in. And I do want you, as we're stepping out of here, you were going to sing sometime Wind Beneath My Wings. I know you're not prepped for doing that, but I love that song.
For that one, I'll get the music for that one so I can sing that in a more formalish setting.
Yeah, that's a neat song. You know, it's like the thought adjusters. Talking to the thought adjuster, isn't it?
Well, a thought comes to my mind that I would like to share sort of at the end here, and that is the necessity for us to individually find a quiet place for us to turn within and make contact or at least attempt to open ourselves up to communication with our thought adjuster, with our piece of the Godhead that lives within us individually.
That's our job. Mm-hmm.
It's critical. It's critical for us in this juncture of the planet and our own lives and the situations that I believe are going to be happening. Some dire things are going to change in order for the world to change. Mm-hmm. And we have to be centered enough in a place to know that nothing can snatch us from the hand of our Father and His watch care. So we must be centered in that to understand and not fear. Have no fear, fear not. What was that? Was the watchword Jesus said continuously? Fear not.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, gentlemen, thank you. And they're asking on the board, can we stay another hour? Well, they thought it was two, but on Wednesday we go 1 hour right now. We can go beyond, but I know time is Bob, you're involved with your accounting situation. Larry, I know you're a very tight schedule. And
there's always fires to put out immediately,
But we will see everyone next week. We'll see you Saturday, those who can listen, the Saturday broadcast with Andre, Paula, and Crystal, and when she steps in the door. She was the co-host last Saturday. Dr. Lawrence Scotty, a great scholar who actually introduced me to the book through Serendipitous Way in 1978. So I'm very excited about that. And thanks again, Larry, and we'll see you here next time. Thank you, Bob, and going to end with one of my favorite songs. We're going off the air now. It's a fun song by a gentleman here in East Texas. He's gone on to the Mansion Worlds. It's a fun song called Mansion Boogie. You guys ready to dance?
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Ann.
Bye. God bless. Right.
Bye,
bye-bye. Everybody. We will stay in the chat room.
Bye-bye.
Everybody, come on in, move to this land. come on.